The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 10th of December, 2020. On the podcast today, Tim Watts, CEO of Shield Therapeutics, provides an update on his plans to commercialize Accrufer in the US and talks about their cash position. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about companies, I suppose, with some exposure to the EV revolution is going to happen. We talk a lot about that as well. That's Alta Strategies, Arc Minerals, Empire Metals, Rio Tinto, and Soul Gold. And at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'd also see lots of other content, videos there, Trellis Health with Paul Hill there, an EKF diagnosis company discuss their IPO plans. There's also one there on Downing Renewables and Infrastructure Trust, and one on Iconic Labs. What else? Infrastrata signs a letter of intent worth up to £720 million. Wow. And, of course, you can see our COVID-19 index at the top there of the website. And the biggest rise of the day is Gfinity, up 5.4%, 3.9 pence. Biggest faller, Avacta Group, down 8.6% to 111.5 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim Watts, CEO of Shield Therapeutics, STX, his ticker there. Tim, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good morning.
Now, you've released some news on the update as far as US partnering discussions and, you know, launch of Accrufer in the US, and there's a lot of detail in that RNS. So let's start off by, you know, if people are listening and they're not familiar with the company, just give us a brief summary, Tim, if you could, as to what Shield is all about.
Okay, Shield is a product, a company that has developed a product for the treatment of iron deficiency. It's an oral product. Its brand name in Europe is Ferrocru. Its brand name in the US is Accrufer. And this is a new novel type of oral treatment for iron deficiency, which we believe has benefits over and above the existing and older generic oral salts, and also has benefits, we believe, over the alternative to oral, which is the intravenous treatment of iron deficiency. And what we're talking about today is how we're going to commercialize that product in the US.
Yeah, exactly. And I see that line there. You provide an update on his plans to commercialize Accrufer in the US and your cash position. Now, investors always want to know the cash position. So let's start with that, Tim, if you could. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and this is important, an important component of the announcement we put out today, because we'd previously guided that the cash we had would last us into the first quarter of the next year. Mm-hmm. And clearly, people were beginning to get a little bit nervous. So we have been able to source some loans from two of our significant shareholders. One is AOP, who own a little over 10% of the company. The other is Dr. Christian Schweiger, who is a director. He also owns about 3.5% of the company. And we're very grateful to them for their confidence in the company and being willing to make these loans available, which gives us the runway out to the back end of 2021. So that we can, you know, get on with finding the right commercial solution for the US.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the US licensing then. What's happening there?
So as everybody who's followed us knows, we have been following a path over the last 18 months of looking for a licensed partner for Accrufer in the US. It was approved in the US for a very broad indication. That's the treatment of iron deficiency in adults. And we've been looking for a route to commercialize Accrufer in the US through licensing. And that strategy really dates back some time in the company's history. And as we've touched on in the RNS, we've got very close to a deal on several occasions. And we've had some frustrations. In a couple of cases, we got right the way through the development of all the detailed license documentation and supply documentation, and those are, you know, many pages of legal agreements, only to have the unfortunate situation of very close to the end where the other companies have backed out for different reasons, but not related to ACTFA, related to the evolution of their own business, which has given them reason to pull out at the last minute. And you know, that's been immensely frustrating for us. Mm. And did lead us to the thought that grew on us during the summer, I suppose, that we really needed to perhaps look for want of a better phrase, an insurance policy where perhaps we had more control over the final outcome. And so we began to think about, you know, could we contemplate launching ACTFA ourselves in the US, you know, rather than trying to rely on a licensed partner. Mm-hmm. And during the course of the last 15 months or so, we have talked to many companies who've expressed a strong interest in ACTFA. There's no doubt people are very interested by it and think it's an interesting product. Many of those companies have been focused, that their focus is on a single therapy area. And one of the things about ACTFA, which makes it a very large and big opportunity, is that iron deficiency is seen across many therapeutic areas. It ranges from chronic kidney disease, inflammatory bowel disease. You see it in cardiology. You see it in oncology, in women's health management. So that it has a very wide usage. And you know, part of the issue that we've faced as we've tried to find a licensed partner is how, if you talk to a company which is focused on, for example, inflammatory bowel disease and gastroenterology, mm-hmm. how do we, as the owner of the product, make sure that ACTFA, we get the value for ACTFA, not just in inflammatory bowel disease, where that party might be great, but that the product is then sold elsewhere and that we can get the royalties from elsewhere. So, you know, that's been one part of our thought process, is if we talk to companies like this, how do we really make sure that we can get the long-term financial value from the product? And the other thing, or another thing that we've seen, is many of the companies that have talked to us have been relatively small, and in some cases even startups with perhaps significant financial backing, wanting to acquire a product like ACTFA so that they can start to build their own sales and marketing presence in the US, perhaps because they've got their own phase three product coming through and they want to get a sales and marketing organization up and running. Mm-hmm. And the more we've talked to companies like that, the more we have understood the US market, the opportunity, and also the thought, if a company like that can contemplate taking ACTFA and starting up and running it from scratch, perhaps we could do that ourselves. Why do we need to rely on a third party to do that? So we started to develop that as an insurance party, an insurance policy, as I say, so that perhaps we would not be reliant on another party absolutely coming to the finishing line and signing.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose it's worth pointing out, you know, the potential there in the US, the market opportunity. Tell us about that, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, the market opportunity, we think, is very substantial. We believe there's something in the region of 10 million prescriptions for iron each year. We think there's around 10 million patients who have anemia as a result of iron deficiency, and there are probably maybe a couple of two to three times more who actually have the broader iron deficiency, who are not yet anemic. So there's a huge number of people out there who have it, and a lot of those prescriptions, the vast majority of those prescriptions, are actually for oral products. A relatively small minority are for intravenous therapy. So for a product like ACTFA, which is oral and which we believe offers some advantages over both the existing older orals and the intravenous products, it just shows you, you know, what a large opportunity there is. And if you add to that, COVID is making intravenous less attractive because patients mm-hmm. don't want to go into, particularly patients with underlying health of, issues, yeah. do not want to go into hospitals to receive their intravenous infusion. Doctors don't want to send them into hospitals. So there is some evidence emerging that intravenous iron therapy is is perhaps not performing quite as well during 2020, and that there are more oral prescriptions being written. So, you know, we do think there's a great opportunity here now for Accrufer, and the wind is blowing in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looking forward there, you know, any kinds of milestones you hope to achieve or news you hope to tick off that investors or potential followers can look out for?
Well, what I think what we're saying in this RNS is that we're really telling investors that we're still looking at license opportunities, and we still have other companies out there, very credible companies out there that we're talking to. But our fingers have been slightly burnt, so we don't want to entirely rely on that. We're developing plans. We're using appropriate US experts and specialists to advise us and support us on really building up our plans in great detail. We're working out exactly how would we get the product from Europe, where we manufacture it, into the US supply chain, right the way into pharmacies all across the states and in individual states, you know, where you need state licenses and so on. So we're working out how you'd go about approaching the people who pay, the insurance companies who pay for the drug. What about the marketing? What about the sales and promotion? And of course, one of the things that's emerged, or it has been emerging over a couple of years and has been accelerated by COVID, is the greater attraction now of e-detailing, of remote marketing, and so on, which really means that a small company has the potential to reach a bigger community of prescribers than perhaps might have been the case in the past. So there's a number of things, I think, which we're seeing and we're working out and we're looking at, we could do this very credibly as an alternative to a license deal.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, as always then, at the end, Tim, there, for people listening who like the sound of the progress you're making here but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add Shield Therapeutics to their watch list, please.
So I think we have the fact that the product is a great new treatment, a nice convenient oral treatment for iron deficiency, which is a widespread ailment. We have the fact that the product is already partnered in Europe and in China. It's on the market in Europe and it's growing steadily. In China, we hope it'll come to the market in 2023. So the value of the company is underpinned by the European and the Chinese opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then there is a huge upside available from the US when we resolve whether we're going to go down the license route or whether we decide to commercialize the product in the US ourselves.
Excellent stuff. Tim, good to chat to you. And thanks for the update. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angels. Right, John?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Now, you were just talking there, quite controversial there, John. You were saying some of these tech stocks, the valuations that have, you know, gone up. It's reminding you of the dot-com bubble, you reckon?
Yeah, it certainly takes me back to 1999, so to speak, and the development of the dot-com bubble and the big valuations we saw on what were relatively young internet stocks. And of course, you know, the theory behind that was completely correct, that we would all become very well connected by the internet. It would affect everything, just about everything that we do. But unfortunately, valuations built up to such a crescendo that they ended up collapsing. I think it was 2001, and that did a certain amount of damage to people's wealth at the time. If you remember back to Alan Greenspan's irrational exuberance, well, I'm not sure what Alan Greenspan would say about the valuation of Tesla right now, and one or two others. We've got Airbnb floating in the States, I think, today. And there was another big one yesterday. So there's a lot going on, and the valuations are pretty crazy out there.
Isn't the difference, though? I mean, that these big tech stocks, you know, they do generate revenue. Some of them generate profits. They've got a business model. Whereas dot-com, I remember it, and I remember literally there being in the smaller cap space, a company would announce it's going to change its name to dot-com in the end, and it would double overnight. And you could just jump in there, and if you jump out. I sort of doubled my money in those dot-com bubble. I lost a bit more of it there than I made, because I wasn't that experienced. But, you know, they didn't have any any substance, no business behind them. And if you look at like something like Facebook, PE of 28, Amazon, PE of 100, that's, do you know what, I think it's justified. Amazon, everyone's addicted to it, it's just taking over everything. Apple, PE of 21, Netflix, that's a bit higher, 85, Alphabet, 25. So they're not overblown. Tesla, of course, is nuts, but I mean, like I said, that is the future. I don't know any trend like the EV trend. I've never known anything like, I don't see a bigger trend happening than in our lifetime than this, because every government in the world, I keep saying this, you know, is said they're going to stop doing diesel and petrol, apart from sort of, you know, the sort of banana states like North Korea and stuff. I don't know where they stand on it, but they're not relevant anyway. They're big enough. But I mean, all the big governments, all developed governments in the world, you know, put a line in the sand as to when, you know, we're going over to EV and hydrogen and alternatives. So there's a massive rush. I mean, now where are we? 3% of cars on the road are like EV and hybrid. And it'll be, they're aiming to get 30% by 2030. That's going to be a massive demand on anything. Anything that has exposure to the EV is going to sort of rise in the tide, don't you think? And of course, the flag waver here is Tesla. They're up there, they're the market leader. So even though you say it's risen a lot and you can't really, you know, it's overvalued, I mean, what price do you put on the future? You know, because they are leading the future, aren't they?
Well, they definitely are leading the future and showing the way. And I think what's going to surprise consumers is we're talking all the time to minerals producers who are producing battery anodes and related products and providing the raw material for new batteries. And we're talking to some of the battery companies about the developments that they're making. And what we can see is that the improvement in performance of batteries and those battery packs is going to be so material that actually consumers are really going to want electric vehicles going forwards. They're much more reliable, they're quieter, they're much cheaper to run. And I'm not saying this is the end of gasoline and diesel, because there's still a place for that. But your average consumer is going to want to be in an electric vehicle going forwards, not just because policymakers are going to make it really hard to drive a gasoline or a diesel vehicle into town, but also because it's going to be a much better ride and a much better option for the consumer. And what we're seeing now is all the car companies, or virtually all the car companies, are switching their production lines across from conventional ICU vehicles to electric vehicles. And I think Volkswagen are spending 45-50 billion euros on that. It's really, really big investment. So this is coming at us quite fast. Personally, I'm holding back from looking at or considering one of these vehicles, just waiting for the battery technology those improvements in battery technology to come through, because the battery packs are a really expensive part of the car. And getting another 20%, 30% performance out of that battery pack makes a really big difference. I mean, we're now looking at battery packs that can do maybe a half recharge in 15 minutes. That was an announcement that came out of a company a couple of days ago. And we see similar statements from other people producing battery anodes and other parts of the, who are involved in other parts of the battery chain. And so, yeah, the performance improvements are going to be extraordinary. I think making the car itself is relatively standard. There are other bells and whistles. You want permanent magnets in the motors. They require neodymium and praseodymium. And I see that those prices have been rising recently, although that's more to do with offshore wind farms than anything else.
Yeah. And do you know what, though? I'm not worried about the tech getting better. You know, never bet against human innovation. And we've seen that with the COVID-19 vaccines. You know, 10 months we've gone from, you know, not knowing about, or even say, within a year, most of the people didn't know about this virus. And then we've almost cracked the vaccine within a year. That's phenomenal. Normally that takes 5 to 10 years, you know. And human innovation, when you throw enough, and do you know what it's all about, pretty much? It's funding. When there's enough funding there, and you have a live virus that's you know, proliferating, and you can get people into trials. I mean, because that's the problem with SARS and MERS. You know, as we started doing the clinical trials, first of all, there wasn't a level of funding. You know, it didn't paralyze the economies around the world like COVID did. So there are a lot of people prepared to put money behind this. And secondly, there wasn't the clinical trial numbers. You know, people started getting immune to it, and all of a sudden, then they didn't have the live numbers to test, but So I just think batteries and their capability, their storage, the chargeability, how fast they charge, and their capacity will, you know, obviously exponentially improve with funding. And we know, let's be honest, if we're all switching over to electric, the funding will be there. You know, it'll find a way. You know.
Well, we are in this extraordinary environment where the stars are aligned. Policymakers want to put money into local economies to get to recreate economic growth. We know that's it. That's important. That's the only way to dig ourselves out of the recessionary environment. We don't want to see lots of money heading off to oil-rich nations in the Middle East. That money is better spent generating electricity back at home. Best way to do that is using renewable energy, so you keep the greenies happy. We need to clean up the air quality in our towns and cities. Best way to do that is to get rid of internal combustion engines and replace them with electric vehicles. So there's so many reasons to want to move and to want to electrify just about everything that we do, and to generate that power back home. And the UK government also approved Rolls-Royce's proposal for what was it, 12, 14 mini nuclear reactors. So again, distributed power, a very important part of this chain. And as part of that, again, it's going to be battery backup for solar and wind power generation. And the UK government approved the huge Dogger Bank wind farm, offshore wind farm. That's going to be the largest wind farm project in the world next year, I believe, and installing the world's very largest wind turbines. And every year I look, these wind turbines get bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Cool. So let's chat about some individual stocks then, John. What's happening there? What's happening? Any news there? In fact, I knew we went through a list previously. Let's go alphabetical. So we want to, ALS, ALS, Altus. What's happening there?
Yeah, Altus. They report the new discovery of copper and silver mineralization at Agadez in Morocco. So that's a pretty sensible place from a mining perspective. And they return grades of 3.5% copper and 308 grams of silver in surface samplings. I mean, look, Morocco's not been explored enough over the years, and actually it does. There are a number of mines working there, and it's and the grades are fantastic. So this is a good discovery from Altus. I would expect its shares to do really well on the back of this.
Mm-hmm. More of the stuff. ALS ticker there. What are you doing? Is swatting the fly there, John, or something?
Yeah.
Arc Minerals, favourite. Yeah, there's a bit of exposure to copper there, isn't it?
Yeah, this is one of my favourite copper stocks. The more drill results coming out from two of their projects here, and there's a project called Masemwa in the west of Zambia that they suggest is really rather a large target. Remember, the company is in negotiations with Anglo American over a joint venture agreement at the moment. Anglo's have finished the technical due diligence, and now they've moved on to the, shall we say, the commercial due diligence, as in looking at the licenses and things like that. So it's very likely that Anglo will sign a deal. It's really down to ARC whether ARC will accept the proposal that Anglo will put on the table. The projects certainly look good. They're very interesting in that they're in the right area. They don't add up to make mines just at this stage. Much more work has to be done. But to have Anglo American in there as a joint venture partner will be incredibly helpful, and would certainly reduce the need for further funding.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Yeah, a bit of a run. What happened there? It dipped down to like last week, in the last few days, and went down to 3p, and they've gone back up to 4.2 now. So a bit of a run. Okay, and what's next? It's Empire, Triple E.
Yeah, well, I mean, Justin, when you see these things pull back, you know, if there isn't any obvious reason for the pullback, you should be stepping in and buying again. On Empire, again, very nice drill results here on the Eclipse Gold project just north of Kalgoorlie in Western Australia. These are sensible grades. You can at least form a small open cast mine off the back of these. So they are developing real value as we speak. It wouldn't surprise me if this got flipped on, because I think, but we'll see. I mean, I'm optimistic that there's a bigger target here. And certainly they're following extensions to the gold mineralization. So although they're talking about it being a small gold mine, which would be nice and easy to get into and provide some quick cash flow, I think there's more potential here. And at the same time, if we think back to their assets in Georgia, the Russian partners, CMG, have expressed a potential interest to exercise their first right of refusal. So on those assets, which were being sold to another group. So it may well be that the Georgian mining gets about $7 million Canadian dollars in short order. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, more stuff. Okay. Rio. What's that, Rio Tinto?
Yeah, no, this is big news in the world of lithium today. Mm. They finally produced a resource on the Jadar lithium project in Serbia. This is so unique. They even uniquely named the mineral Jadar, and you can see a rock of Jadarite in the reception of Rio Tinto offices in St James's Square. So. Look, they say it's very large. It is quite large. They're just talking about production of 50,000 tons a year of battery-grade lithium. And when you look at the expansion in mega factories and gigafactories that are planned around the world, 55,000 tons isn't going to get them very far. But certainly it's a big project. Interestingly enough, it's an underground mine, so it will take at least 4 years to get this thing, to build the mine. They're not going to have the feasibility study ready till the end of next year. So we're talking about a mine that doesn't start for at least 5 years, probably doesn't ramp up to 55,000 tons for about 6 or 7 years. So so that's a bit of a long way off. It doesn't worry me in the world in terms of lithium pricing going forwards. And I think lithium prices are about to take off because the demand for it is ramping up quite quickly now.
Yeah. Well, when did Rio start getting into lithium? When was originally the first with interest? How long ago was that?
Well, no, the history of this is very interesting because they've been into borates for many, many years. And we were talking decades. And it was Bacanora Minerals acquired the Rio Tinto's Mexican borates projects, knowing that they had lithium in them. So Bacanora are, shall we say, ahead of the game. So they acquired these licenses off Rio Tinto. I'm not quite sure why Rio Tinto let them go. I think they thought borates were a bit unexciting at the time. Borates are for advanced glass and fertilizer products. So Rio's let those go, and Bacanora stepped in. The metallurgy's a little difficult, as in the process, the working out how to process the material, because for Bacanora it's a clay-like material, but they've had a pilot plant running on and off for the last 3 years, so you should have cracked that by now. And they've got Ganfeng, the very large Chinese lithium producing company, involved with them there. So I think Bacanora will probably be okay, but on the, shall we say, maybe on the back of some of that work, Rio Tinto is now pushing ahead with Jadar.
Yeah. Well, it's just interesting, is that you see when the big boys like that sort of get in, you know, to this area, you know there's going to be an explosion there somewhere along the line, don't you? Because, I mean, you know, it's, like I said, that's the way it... Because what has been traditionally their commodities, it wasn't lithium, was it? Now they're making a bit of a song and dance about it. So it's going to be go... You know, we all know that you've got to be... Everyone, any investor should have some kind of exposure to this EV, you know, revolution. You know, because it's going to go mad, I think. I really do, you know?
Well, I think this is the way to play the EV market. You could chase up some of the tech stocks, and maybe you get lucky, maybe you don't. But
I've had a lot of luck with resource companies, and so I tend to go to the tech side because I want companies generating revenue already. You know, so I've got two tech stocks that are exposed to EV. A bit overpriced, but they're British. They're only British small, but they've both got proprietary, you know, tech. So it's very good, and they've both got sort of big things happening. So that's the way I go.
But at the end of the day, these gigafactories, mega factories, and new automotive production lines for electric vehicles are being built right now.
Yeah. So in the UK,
assuming they get filled, somebody's going to have to supply the lithium, the graphite,
yeah,
nickel, the cobalt. and the manganese to make those batteries, and the rare earths for the motors, for the cars. So let's not forget the copper. There's lots of copper in these electric vehicles, and there's copper required for cabling up the charging stations as well. So there's going to be huge new demand for a whole range of materials as a result of this.
Yeah. And is there any way, I haven't looked up how many gigafactories are going to be built, but there's some plan for the UK, I assume. There's got to be, isn't there, if you're building cars here?
I have a list of them somewhere. Yes, there are people planning factories. But the big ones are in Europe. You've got Northvolt in Sweden. You've got Volkswagen planning things in Germany. There's a lot happening, of course. And for every one factory in the Western world, there seems to be three in China. So it's an arms race, but from a battery perspective.
Yeah. In fact, so I'm just looking at an article here. This is from the 15th of November. And it says UK regions compete to host gigafactory for electric batteries. So it's West Midlands, South Wales, and North East England among the regions vying to host the UK's first gigafactory. So they'll say the UK government will spend £1 billion. So the start, not a lot that, but there we are. Cool. John, anything else? Solid gold you're going to mention?
Well, just to follow up on that, I have a list in front of me of about 175 very large factories being either built or being planned at the moment, so that gives you an idea. With just tremendously huge capacity. Solgold drilling underway at Cascabel on their on the copper gold target there. So they've got yet another porphyry that they're drilling at. So look, I think there's a lot more value to come out of Solgold in terms of new discoveries. The new Taneyama Creek project returned an assay result of 37 meters grading 0.25% copper equivalent. That's not the highest grade in the world, but it's a very good start, and it's a nice intersection, so probably more to come out of that one.
Marvellous stuff, John. Thanks for that, and we'll speak you next week.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Alien Metals, down 8.7% to 1.05. At 4, Helium 1, down 13.33% to 6.5. At 3, Infrastrata, up 12.6% to 49 pence. At 2, it's a Blue Star Capital, up 27.27% to 0.21. And at 1, Rehable Resources, it's up 30%. To 0.6 pence. All right, top five most liked, most read RNSs are as follows. At five, it is Rehable Resources, significant hydrocarbon discovery at West Newton. Of course, they own part of that with UJO, Union Jack Oil. At four, Jangada Mines, initial follow on drilling results at Pitumbares. At four, Greencore Holdings. At two, Octagonal update. Re-accounts, audited accounts and interim dividend. At one, Solid Potash funding update and short extension to ASX suspension, hopefully unsuspended tomorrow with funding in place and a placing there as well. Most read are Gritland Gold, Tiziana, Union Jack and Vast. So check those out. voxmarkets.co.uk. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.